Welcome to the Passion and Soul Podcast, an exploration of personal and interpersonal desire, faith, and connection. Your host, international sexuality and spirituality author and educator, Lee Harrington of PassionandSoul.com, will take you on a sultry and intellectual journey through the soul of intimate experience. Take a moment and breathe deep and get ready for an adventure. This podcast is a chance to glimpse into the ever-increasing diverse world of alternative life. The Passion and Soul Podcast is intended for mature audiences. If you are offended by adult topics or prohibited by law, we recommend you stop listening right now.
Hello, fellow adventurers of sexuality and spirit, and welcome to the Passion and Soul Podcast with Lee Harrington of PassionandSoul.com. I am in this whirlwind right now. For people who haven't been on my Twitter feed or over on Facebook, I have been teaching in Texas and going and doing ritual work over in South Central Washington, and being all over the place doing a lot of different projects, and I'll be posting a lot of that online for folks who are interested in following it there. And part of that whirlwind has been taking care of my own relationship and taking care of my relationship with myself and working on how we as journeyers work with this amazing journey of who we are and how we want to be in our lives. And when I was thinking about all of this, I had wanted for a while to bring this person on to have an interview with, and I thought this was a great time to do so when looking at personal journeys and how we tie into our relationships and be authentic people. And that person is Cunning Minx. Now, Minx is the sultry voiced producer and host of the wildly popular Polyamory Weekly, in continuous production for over 10 years, which is stunning. Now, referred to as the Terry Gross of polyamory, Cunning Minx shares tales from the front of responsible non-monogamy from a pansexual, kink friendly point of view through the podcast and her book, 8 Things I Wish I Had Known About Polyamory, through speaking engagements and her new online poly course, which I'm so excited to hear more about. Now, a kinky booby sexual, Minx founded the show as a resource for the poly and poly curious to form a community and share experiences and help guide each other on their journeys of poly and kinky exploration. And welcome to the show, Minx. It's great to have you.
It is great to be here, Lee.
Yum, yum, yum. So I am still blown away when I realize it's been 10 years, because I remember some of the first shows. And so I'm like, when did a decade pass?
I know. I'm thinking it's still 2005, right? I mean, that wasn't that long ago, right?
Oh, I know. I have those moments too where I'm like, so not long ago I was living in Portland, Oregon, and I'm like, wait, what? That's been a decade. Shoot.
Yeah, it went by quickly. It really did. I keep thinking, oh, I've been podcasting for about 5 years, and I was like, no, it's like 11 years, not five. It just went by really fast.
Well, and during that time, your own relationship structures and personal development and growth from the pieces that I've seen and interacted with has really evolved as well, not just the show.
Okay. Well, that's because when I first started the show, I'd been in a poly relationship for like a year or two. And the reason I started the podcast was because, we had hit so many of the poly relationship landmines. I mean, so this was with the Gray Dancer, who does the Ropecast. And he has, he and his then wife and I were basically doing a long-term poly relationship for the first time. And while he had some friends who were poly, I did not. I had the ethical slut and Susie Bright's non-monogamy blowout, period. And we just didn't have a lot of resources, and we kind of muddled through, and there was all this drama all the time, and like every week was like, oh my God, let's get on the phone and talk about this. Or, oh, I got to drive up there so we can talk about this. And, you know,
yeah.
And even when things went well, it was long distance, right? So it's driving, you know, 100, 150 miles to see the partner.
Right.
So, you know, and it was the first poly and the first kink relationship. The first long-term, well, it wasn't his first kink relationship, but it was mine. And it was for like real, you know, DS type relationship that was long-term. And there was just so much going on. So it was just nothing but a drama fest. And, you know, when he suggested podcasting, I was like, oh yeah, sure. Why not? I can chatter away into a microphone. No problem. Summer's my slow season. I'll just throw out a few podcasts. Two people will listen and I'll move on to something else. And it didn't really work out that way. You know, 11 years later.
Well, and things in our life take on a life of their own, I find. That's for me as an author and as a teacher, you put things out into the world and then they go on their own journey.
They really do. I never really thought that the podcast was going to be a big thing and would be such a huge part of my life. And it's been really interesting. You know, I think my poly experience would have been, my own poly experience would have been very different without the podcast, because Great Answer and I were together for 5 years, and then we broke up. And it was really hard. In fact, I didn't mention the breakup on the podcast for 3 months because I couldn't find a way to do it without like crying or sounding angry or bitter or resentful. So I'm like, well, I don't want to say I need to be at peace with this. I need to be able to present this in a fairly reasonable manner or people are going to, you know, I wanted to have my shit together, basically.
Right.
So, you know, it took a while. And it was interesting because, you know, Great Answer co-hosted the podcast so frequently that people felt like, you know, the two of us are really the co-hosts. And for most other poly podcasters, when their relationship broke up, they stopped podcasting. Because understandably, you're going through a divorce or a life change and you don't want to, you know, you have other stuff to do that is more important than getting on the microphone. But for some reason, I've always been really independent, I guess. And I felt like it was really important to keep going because the podcast, even at that point, had a life of its own. And it was very interesting for me. If I hadn't been doing the podcast, I probably would have questioned whether I was, quote unquote, really poly, because I was basically a solo poly for the next couple of years. I was still self-identified as poly, but I was dating, and I would date some monogamous people because they're all over the place. And when I could, I would date poly people, but poly people are usually very busy. If they self-identify as poly, they probably have a number of other partners. And so it's kind of hard to get together with them. And there was this period when I'm like, well, I kind of look monogamous and kind of act monogamous. I'm like, am I looking and quacking monogamously? Can I still be poly if I'm just out there dating like every other person? It was, and because I was doing the podcast, I'm like, well, the word poly's in the podcast, so I guess I am poly.
Well, no, I completely hear that as somebody who has been in, you know, open and consensually non-monogamous relationships since I was in middle school. It's been really interesting being happily in a monogamous relationship, and making that choice has been interesting, not just for my own journey, but to have other people write stories about my journey and like in their own mind, and to dance that line for myself of, am I still poly if I am choosing right now to be in a monogamous relationship?
Yeah, I dated a guy who self-identified as monogamous. And, you know, I told him I was poly, but that I wasn't dating anybody else at the time. And I would tell him if I did. And, you know, it was interesting. He had, you know, he had great hair. I have a hair fetish. I do.
Oh, that's stunning.
Yeah. But it was really an interesting journey. I mean, his nickname that I used on LiveJournal, which tells you how long ago this was, his nickname that I used on LiveJournal was Confirmed Bachelor. And, you know, that turned out very much to be the case. He just, you know, very much wasn't really interested in bringing anybody else into his life. And, you know, at some point you come to that point where you kind of realize, well, I could just keep on doing the same thing and it's fine, but maybe not. Anyway, yeah, that point in particular, the point where Grey Dancer and I broke up, and the years that followed where I still was considering myself a poly activist, but wasn't feeling very poly because I didn't have, you know, a long-term poly relationship. And I was really mostly dating and failing and learning a lot about myself and about how other people date.
Well, and for me at least, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, having some of those opportunities to learn other people's journey have taught me a lot about my own personal exploration techniques.
You know, I wish I could put it in that positive a way. Mostly, I just really got hurt a lot.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's completely fair.
Yeah, it's really tough being a solo poly person out there because you kind of, you know, you can get kicked around a lot. Some poly couples, especially new poly couples, will often see you as their savior. Like, oh, she meets all our check boxes, so, you know, therefore she's perfect. And I'm like, no, I'm a person. I have flaws. I have needs. You know, I try to be authentic, but, you know, there's some, you know, I have some needs that you may or may not be willing to meet. And it was, you know, there was one point when I actually saw a couple like high-fiving over meeting me. And it was, I didn't realize at the time because I'm a little socially clueless sometimes. But once I figured that out, I was like, okay, that's a little weird. But I was still like, okay, you know, I like the guy and he's really cute. And, you know, they're at the poly meetup, so they must be experienced poly.
Yeah.
That was not the case. But yeah, there was a lot of hurt and a lot of pain. And I really discovered, I think I've been hurt a lot more by poly dating experiences than by my mono dating experiences, I think. And I think it's just because the expectations were higher. I felt like I was part of a community. And so I had a higher level of trust for the people I met in the community. And I know this is a common experience because I actually just recently released an episode about somebody who wrote in and said, I'm so excited about the poly community. And I discovered this lifestyle and I found this place, the poly community, where I felt safe and wonderful. And then then she discovered that there were assholes in it. And there were people who lie and are unethical and do things that she and most other people don't approve of. And she's like, what do I do? I'm like, well, you know, unfortunately that happens everywhere. I found that out the hard way too, that, just because you meet somebody in the poly community doesn't mean that, you know, their poly is going to match yours, doesn't mean that their ethics are going to match yours, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to treat you the way you want to be treated. You have to, you know, you just have to be as open and upfront as you can be about what your needs are without, you know, having a checklist that you're going through, because I find that very inconsiderate. And it's just, it's really tough. I mean, in the end, the way that I found my partner now, Lusty Guy, was actually oddly enough not through the poly community, but it was through a mutual shared activity. I'm really into local black box theater, and a friend of mine invited me to his one man show, My Time with the Lady, about his 10 years working as a janitor at the Lusty Lady Peep Show in Seattle. And he was on stage telling the story. I'd had a glass of wine, I admit it. And he was on stage just telling stories, spinning stories that were highly entertaining. And I'm just looking back going, okay, A, he's not wearing a wedding ring. B, he had long, dark, wavy hair and beard, which is, you know, the type that I tend to like. And I'm like, and his stories keep me entertained. And all I really want to this point in my life is to be amused. So I asked him out. And well, I guess there's a little more to that story, which is that I actually looked him up on Facebook because, being an actor, his name was on the program. So I sort of had a cheat sheet, right? And And I looked him up on Facebook and saw that he was, in fact, married. But even though the wine had long since worn off, I know actors well enough to know that any accolade, especially from a cute girl, is going to be welcome. So I sent him a Facebook message saying, hey, saw your show. I was expecting to laugh. I wasn't expecting to cry. And I really didn't think you could tell a story that would squick me that much. So bravo. Well done. Oh, my God. There was one story. Anyway, he'll share it with you. You should get him on the podcast. He'll share it with you. I won't because I find it disgusting. Anyway, so I wrote him and said, I saw your show. It was really amazing. Now I see that you're married, but just so you know, I was attracted to you and I would ask you out. I would have asked you out had you not been married. So go home and tell your wife that you've still got it and cute girls still find you hot. And he famously messaged me back without reading my Facebook profile and said, well, I don't know if you've heard of this thing called polyamory, but my wife and I have been poly for 30 years. Now, on the one hand, what a crazy coincidence. Like, what are the chances that somebody that I like randomly is polyamorous and has been for 30 years? But on the other hand, he's an actor, so the odds go up.
Yes, I once saw a shirt in Portland, Oregon at a science fiction convention that says "Buy Polly Switch," and on the back said "Not indecisive, just greedy." And the "Buy Polly Switches" of "Buy Polly Switch Gamer Geek of PDX" was its own like Usenet group.
Oh my God.
That had 100 members that were all of those things. And it's like, yeah, because all of those things.
Yeah, right. Of course. Yeah. I mean, because gamer geeks are going to be, you know, buy Poly Switch. Sure, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. And it is, Raven Caldera refers to it as crossover axes of freakdom.
Oh, I love it. That's a great way to put it.
That once you're on one of these axes, the likelihood that you're going to cross another one gets higher and higher.
You know, I'm often asked that. I used to be, and not so much anymore, I used to be asked a lot why it was that so many people in the sci-fi world were at least, if not poly, at least had heard of it and were maybe poly adjacent or at least poly friendly. Mm-hmm. And really, the only thing I could really think of is that, you know, once you have pondered alternative realities, then alternative relationship styles really aren't that much of a leap.
It was also specifically broken down by Heinlein in a book called Stranger in a Strange Land, which is a classic of the sci-fi world. And yeah. So it's – and when I talk to a lot of – specifically when I talk to people in the sci-fi community, like about three quarters of them go, Heinlein? Because it would actually – and I only share the story because that actually wasn't my introduction to it. But when I asked that exact question of nerds I know, that was the answer I was given.
Yeah, I definitely did not come to it through Heinlein, although I do have my sci-fi geekiness. And it is definitely true that there are a lot of geeks and nerds who've read about polyamory through Heinlein at a very young age and imprinted on it at that time. That's true.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned was the idea of trying to keep yourself authentic while you're journeying into finding additional new people to date or whatever that is. How do you or how have you tapped into that, listening to that authentic sense of self and listening to what you want and need? Because every human has needs and it has nothing to do with being needy. It's just every human has needs. So how do you listen to that?
Well, I think I don't remember why it is that I first wrote my own user manual. I think it might have been out of frustration with dating. I should have like some great story about that as well, but I don't really remember. I just did it at some point. And I think that's because I'm an organizational person and but I also have a terrible memory. So I can't remember who I've told what and who knows what bits about me. And on a date, I'm so busy trying to like get a feeling for the other person and be a good listener and all of those things that it's hard to both be a really good listener and be your authentic, fun, your best self at the set. Like, mm-hmm. I find that very difficult to do. So part of it, that was part of the logic behind the user manual, is like, I'm just going to write this down. I'm going to write all this stuff down so that, you know, anybody who's interested, you know, can, I'll put a link to it on my OkCupid profile and they can go look at it and then they'll know. So I won't be hiding anything and there won't be any landmines and we can still go have a date, but at least then I can relax so that I'm not having to go through, you know, here are the types of things that I'm interested in. You know, one of the things in my user manual, a lot of it's just very practical stuff. Like, I do have a section on how to flirt with me and the sexual things that turn me on. But there's also a section on, you know, look, I get up really early. I get up at like 5:30 in the morning. So do not ask me to do a scene that starts at midnight. That is not going to happen. I think my user manual says, oh, I'm in bed by midnight and I need to change it because these days it's like I'm in bed by 10, you know, 9 o'clock, I'm kind of yawning going home. Right. So, right. You know, and that's important to know because, you know, especially on the kink scene, I got really frustrated because I wasn't somebody's primary partner. And so I would try to set up scenes on site and they're like, okay, sure, I would love to after I've seen with these three other people, which puts me at like 2 o'clock in the morning, which I know is not going to happen. And right. I'm trying to tell them that doesn't work for me without seeming like a greedy bitch who wants to jump to the front of the line. So I actually kind of gave up on trying to set up. I don't really set up scenes on site anymore for various reasons, but that was the first one was that, you know, by the time I meet somebody, I've met enough people and we've actually, you know, discovered that we have things in common and we might want a scene, you know, chances are that it's too late unless we can scene like within the next hour, you know, and still have me safely get, you know, to bed where I can sleep and all of this. So there's weird shit like that, right? Things like, it's not you, it's my bedtime. and other things like, I tend to do kind of a monogamous version of poly. Like I generally will date one person and get to know one person. I'll take a couple of years to do that relationship. And then I might add another one, but I don't add like two new relationships at the same time. I have a very demanding day job. I've got the podcast. I need to sleep. I have a very cute cat that really wants me to pet it half the time. So, you know, I have demands on my time and affection. So I'm not going to do two at the same time. And which may or may not affect anybody that I'm going to date. But I discovered I would look in wonderment as other people could do that. And I very quickly discovered, I mean, I did it a little bit like in my 30s, but quickly discovered that that doesn't really work for me. I need to be able to focus. I need to be able to throw myself into one form of NRE at a time, enjoy the NRE. And then after a year or two, then maybe another one. And if somebody else has a different style, like I also know that for me, if I am with somebody who is dating somebody new every day of the week, because I feel like I really, my metamors basically need to either, they don't have to be my best friend, but I really need to be able to feel comfortable with them and talk to them. I need to be able to have lunch with them every now and then. And that's, again, a demand on my time and energy, which I have increasingly less of. So if somebody is dating someone new every week and I need to meet with that person a couple times to feel comfortable, then all of a sudden, 100% of my social time is accounted for just by meeting that person's metamor. Now, I know that that's my baggage is they don't need it. They might not need it. And the metamor might not need it, but I know I need it. So that's really going to limit, the kind of person that I can date. So there's that. And, you know, and then there's a DS aspect, you know, it doesn't have to be in every relationship that I have. In fact, it's decreasingly so, but you know, if somebody's really turned off by that, then that could be an issue. I just found that writing all these things down in a user manual made it, I've never actually given the user manual to anyone, oddly enough, although I do post it online so other people can see what it looks like so they have a model to follow. But I find that having written it down in bullet points makes it much easier to remember when I am meeting somebody that I do have a connection with and we need to go through that quick bullet points of, you know, okay, I mean, which ways do we align and do we align in enough ways? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it sounds like a really great way to do internal self-assessment, too, of going through your own history and your own life and look at what are my needs, what are my desires, because a lot of times I find folks, or at least myself, kind of blow off some of those things where it's like, oh, I'd like it, but if it doesn't happen, when the reality is, no, actually, that is a need.
Right. And it's not even, some of the things aren't needs, it's more of a perspective. Like, for example, I start off with a section on family history because we all come from somewhere. And a lot of time our childhood and or our adolescent years and the way we're treated and the way we see the world in that time is hard to let go of even in adulthood. Whether it sometimes it's trauma, but sometimes it's just a worldview that you've just held for a really long time. And one of the things that's important to know about me is that I come from a family that is just not close. It wasn't abusive, you know, nothing like that. But it's just a very non-close family. One of the examples I give is that a couple of years ago, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. I was septic, which has a 50% survival rate. And actually, I think it's lower than that. Anyway, it was fairly doom and gloom. And my family didn't even, my biological family didn't even consider coming to visit or make a call or anything. And of course, my friends are all horrified. And I'm like, no, that's just how they are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and I even talked to my mom at one point and she's like, well, I can't do anything. So why would I come up there? I'm like, yeah, it makes perfect sense. So, but knowing that that's my family background, and then, so then I explain why it would be nice. This is a nice to have, not a must have. But when I discovered that I could get from a poly family the sense of family that I had not grown up with, but that I had always thought should technically be possible, and that I saw in other people's families, just not in mine. And the fact that, you know, that was really nice to have. Now, it doesn't mean that if I meet somebody I really like and there's not that type of family setting that I'm just going to turn them away. But it's something I think is important to share that, you know, if this is the type of thing that you might be able to offer, you know, if all other things are right and equal, that that would be really cool for me. And I will really, really appreciate it because, you know, I've had heard some people really poo-poo the idea of a poly family being a, quote, family. But for somebody who doesn't really have a family, my poly family is pretty awesome. And I have that now, I'm happy to say, with Lusty Guy and his wife Elle and our little polycule. I mean, they do all the things that I hear that family members do, like pick you up at the airport or, you know, they come to your side when you're at the hospital. Or if you have a medical emergency, they either are there for you or they call someone to be there for you. They take care of you when you're sick. The kind of things that my family didn't really do. So I really value that very highly.
Thank you so much for sharing that because you are not alone on that journey of needing, wanting, desiring family. And I have seen folks be surprised when their poly partners do that and yet aren't surprised when somebody who's monogamous's partner does that. But it's the same discussion, right? Like, at least to me, it's a very similar, perhaps not necessarily the same, but a very similar discussion. So yeah, the surprise confuses me a little bit.
Well, I think it kind of depends on the person. I know plenty of monogamous people that their husband's brother is not welcome in the house for whatever reason, right? And right. I know plenty of poly people where it's funny. So Lusty Guy and Elle have been saying, I love this of late. They're like, yeah, you're not guest anymore. You're family. So we're not cleaning before you come over. And
right.
I love it.
I think that's awesome.
Isn't that fantastic? I love it. But, you know, other people wouldn't see it that way. You know, there are plenty of families who still clean before family comes over. So yeah. It's just, it's different. I don't think it's so much a mono-poly thing as it's based on the individual and the way the relationship is developed.
Nah, that does make sense, because it reminds me of friends where before their partner gets home from work, they make sure that they're in good clothes and are presentable if they've been in kind of slouchy outfits all day.
Oh, it's like the whole 50s housewife thing, which I have to admit, I kind of like. If I didn't have a day job, I would probably totally be doing the 50s housewife thing.
Hopefully, my personal desire would be with hopefully less drinking than the stereotypical, like, that side of the dark side of that discussion.
That's true. Yeah, and I'm a lightweight, so I wouldn't be able to really handle the drinking.
Yeah, me either anymore. The college days have passed.
You know, I always was a lightweight, although I do remember, I think, when I was drinking in my 20s, I could actually have more than one drink as long as I spaced it out over time. Nowadays, it's pretty much one drink. Maybe if I have a second half a glass of wine, ooh, world's going to get crazy.
Yeah, that's what my body has become as well. The joy of being medically complex nowadays.
It's true. But that's okay. I mean, it's just as easy to enjoy one glass of wine as it is to enjoy five, right?
Well, it's like when I tell people stuff about whether it's going on to that one event or going out for that one date, you know, this month versus going out dates for every single day versus going on an amazing date once a year. If you are a consumer, it is very different than if you are a savorer, right? Somebody who savors that date, as you know, because I do meet people that will scarf down their dinner and didn't even really taste it.
Yeah.
And I think dating can be the same way of, are you really being in it and present with it and aware?
Well, I certainly think it's possible to have a date every night of the week and be fully present at each one. Mm-hmm. I can't, but I know that other people can.
That's very true. It's not an either or.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, the person engaging the activity is the only one that could really tell you for sure if they are savoring or if they are simply enjoying life at that pace. Some people enjoy the faster pace and the excitement of doing something every night, even if they may not enjoy the excitement that particular evening as much. They really like keeping up that pace. And me, I just get tired. Like, look, my other partner is the podcast. And because that takes 10 hours of my time every week. So really, if I give up the podcast, then I could probably date a little bit more and I could go out a little bit more. But I don't want to, because I really like feeling like I help people. And that's really, getting back to the podcast, that's what's been driving me the last couple of years in particular. It would have been so easy to quit. I can't help it. I'm a sucker for when you guys write in and say, Minx, your podcast helped me so much. And I'm like, oh, I'm like a cat where you're like, I'm just going to roll over, scratch my belly some more. I'm like, oh, yeah, scratching between the ears. I love it.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I think that for those of us that are educators or podcasters or whatnot, that or any career that reaches out and connects with people and makes some sort of change, that connection that we have with the world at large becomes another relationship to a degree. It's, you know, can be both something that lifts us up or something that shuts us down, at least for me and a couple of other people I've talked to.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. And I know that I don't know a single sex positive educator, performer, podcaster, what have you, that has not at some point just said, you know, why the fuck am I doing this? Because it can get you down. There's just recently a friend of mine, sex positive performer, and just had a string of events that just tore away at herself. And she's usually a super positive person. And she was like, Minx, this, you know, why am I doing this? Why, you know, it's horrible. And I think at that point I was just a sounding board for her. She is off and doing amazing things again. But I think we've all been there at some point when you're like, you know, why the fuck am I giving up so much of my time and my love and my energy and myself?
Yeah.
And to me, I'm so happy that I made the decision many years ago not to try to be a full-time educator and not to try to do this full time. And I know that I probably could have done it for a while, but I also know my tendency to burn out. And I know that I just need periods when I'm not running on all cylinders. I need periods to relax. But if you are doing this full time, that means you're not getting income. That means you're not creating your next session or your next seminar or your next keynote. You kind of have to always be hustling. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to do that for very long. And mm-hmm. so I made a very conscious decision to find a day job in an area that I loved and where I feel like I was contributing and that I felt like I could grow, and to have that be my primary source of income so that my podcast and any teaching and education I did, I would have more choice. And, you know, if I need a couple of months when I'm not teaching or I'm, you know, maybe not podcasting to write a book or if I just decide, like recently when I was looking for a new job, it was a highly stressful emotional situation because things were not going well at my job. And looking for a new job took a lot more time than I remembered and a lot more energy than I remembered. And so I actually put the podcast on hiatus for 2 months, and I'd never done that before. I felt really weird about it, but it was nice to be able to do that and not have to worry about what does this mean for my brand? What does this mean about my income? That I could just pick up where I left off and, you know, go ahead and teach the classes that I had. But if there was a couple month gap in my classes, hey, no biggie, you know, we'll just pick it up again when I have energy. And I knew that because of my health and my emotional state and my other commitments, that that would really be best for me. And it's I have to say, it's a very nice luxury to have.
And I know a number of sex educators and bloggers and podcasters for whom that is the case. But I also know people who have opened up their relationship, who have made a choice to, wow, life has gotten really crazy. We're going to, you know, even though we care about this third person or fourth person, we are going to focus down on the amount of energy that we have and assess what we can and can't do because of what's happening in life. I've seen people who have, you know, multiple jobs that do this. I've seen this happen in so many different circumstances. While there are other people that take that moment and do all of it because the only thing that's keeping them stable is to buckle down and say, no, I can't start letting things go right now because this is what's keeping me grounded. So I think there's lots of different ways to approach those moments of stress.
Yeah, definitely. And again, that's a matter of knowing yourself. What's going to support you more, to throw yourself into the community, to throw yourself into the relationship, to throw yourself into the work, or to pull back and take time for yourself, or a combination of
those. Or a combination.
Exactly.
Yeah. Again, neither and or. It can be and.
Yes, indeed.
So I as I mentioned earlier, you have an online course you're now doing. Can you tell us more about that real quick?
Yeah, we actually put that up a little bit ago. It's called Kicking Polydrama on Its Ass. And it was the reason we did it as an online course is, as a marketer, I just wanted to explore various passive income streams. But primarily because it was one of our most popular classes, it was always packed. Everybody really liked it and told us they got good takeaways from it. And I also realized that, you know, because my travel schedule's limited, I basically have to take a vacation day from work in order to travel somewhere and speak at a conference. So, you know, the people who can't afford to go to Poly Living or to Catalyst Con or to Beyond the Love, the people who can't afford to go to the Poly and Kink conferences are not going to have a chance to take a live class. I mean, you got the podcast, which is fine, but it's not the same as a class where there are learning objectives and we actually walk through things in a lot more detail. So I decided to invest in some online course software and see how that would work. And I'm very pleased with it so far. People seem to really like the course. It was nice to be able to expand that teaching to people who wanted it, who may be in Australia or just in, you know, Montana or right. even just in, maybe they're in Florida or California or a place where they could go somewhere, but they can't take the time off or, you know, they have kids, or maybe they just can't afford to go to a poly conference. So that was really nice. And I've got another course in the works. Again, it's just not quite put together yet. But what we do basically is we take our most popular courses that we know there's a demand for, and then we'll put them online and expand that way. But I really love teaching. And I'm actually working, I just did a pricing adjustment, actually, because I wanted to make the course as affordable as humanly possible, while still mm-hmm. accounting for the huge amount of time it takes to record, put it together, and pay for the software and all of that. So
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's but I really like doing that, because I just feel like it's, you know, I like learning that. Well, I like learning in live classes, but I also do like online courses if it's important and if it's paced out the right way. And so I've gotten some good feedback that people who take the course really do like it and feel like they got a lot out of it. So that's, yay, I'll call it a success.
Oh, that's so wonderful. I love giving those opportunities for folks who, because I have listeners that are in rural Montana and, you know, upper Mississippi, and you just don't necessarily have those same venue opportunities and space opportunities. I was thinking about it recently, that notion of just pure privilege, that notion of pure privilege for folks who can afford to take that one day off of work, right? Of that yeah. the 5-day week, because that is privilege. And having those opportunities to go, you know, if you have internet access, to be able to go online and listen to your, you know, to that class you're doing, mm-hmm. what an amazing gift.
Yeah, it's really, I was very happy to be able to offer it. And we still teach the class live as well, but actually the online course is more information. Like our live class is about an hour and a half, and the online, sometimes it's shorter depending upon the conference. Mm-hmm. And the online course is closer to 3 hours, plus there's all these extra worksheets. So it's kind of nice that we could put in a lot of content that was, that just wouldn't practically fit into a seminar slot. So that was okay. really nice to be able to provide a little something extra. Also to get more guidance on the user manual, because I'm always trying to get people to write the user manual. So I'm like, and this lesson two, this is your homework. Answer these questions and write them down in your user manual.
That's great. And for folks listening at home, I think that's a great idea to start with right now, is what would your user manual look like and how would you do that work? And please send it back to Mink so that we can cross-pollinate this information all around the world, grow a beautiful garden of thought.
Yeah. You know, I hear from a lot of people that they like the idea of the user manual, but that they find it hard to sit down and start writing. But my goal is to actually be able to have a webinar, like a live webinar where you can sign in and we'll be on for an hour and we'll be able to start, at least get a good starting draft of your user manual within that hour by doing some timed writing prompts and a little bit of discussion. So that's the goal, but it's not there yet. But I'm saying it out loud because I really do want to get that webinar up, you know, before. Okay, within the year, I will say.
I love it. Yeah. What a great goal to have.
Yeah.
And for folks who are interested in learning more about the work you're doing and following so they can find out when you're going to be launching this you know, online course on the building your user manual, where can folks find you?
Always the website at polyweekly.com. And if you want, if you're inspired and you want to start writing your own user manual, you can go in the search box and type in RTFM. Geeks know that that is the abbreviation for Read the Fucking Manual. And that will show you the post where I've written the sample user manual. So if you're inspired, you can actually get started on your own for free. But also all the podcast show notes are there at polyweekly.com. Also the links to our Facebook and Twitter, Instagram and Tumblr may be on there too. I'm not sure. And if you have questions, comments, or feedback, you can always email polyweekly@gmail.com or cunningminks@gmail.com. I have been making some progress on wading through my inbox a little bit.
That's beautiful. And for folks who are interested, all of those links she just mentioned and people and podcasts, specific podcasts that we've talked about on this show, are all going to be available over on our show notes. And you can go to passionandsoul.com. www.thepolyglot.com. Go over to the podcasts button and all the information is right there. And thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Mix. I really appreciate you making the time.
Thank you, Lee, for having me. It has been a pleasure.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And for folks who are interested in following us on iTunes, you can type in Lee, L-E-E, Harrington, and find all of our information there and look at past shows or subscribe. And we have our own RSS feed, and you can subscribe to that and Stitcher and all of those other shows through Passion and Soul. And until next time, stay cool, have fun. Be authentically you and have a wonderful day.